Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
For multiple bonus shows per week and access to our full podcast archive featuring in-depth interviews, movie commentaries and live shows, please check out the Steel Wars Patreon podcast feed. The Content Club level is just $3 a month and is chock full of Star Wars fun and really helps the ongoing production of the show. All the bonus shows download into your podcast app like any other show. Give a month a try at patreon.com/Steel Wars. Link is in this episode's show notes. And if you do, hit us up for a question for the weekly Patreon Q&A. And now on with the show. I really hope you enjoy it. Hey guys, and welcome back to Star Wars Year by Podcast. I am comedian Steel Saunders, and I do love Star Wars. And this is normally a Patreon bonus on the Steel Wars podcast feed and the Blue Harvest podcast feed, because it is a crossover bonus podcast released into the wild, co-hosted by my good buddy and yours from the Blue Harvest podcast. It's Horst Burkhardt. How you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I am really well. Jacqueline's out for dinner. Harrison's asleep, and Jerry is grazing the food bowl.
Sounds lovely.
So for people that maybe just listen to your podcast and not mine, they can do like try to work out who's who in my family by that. But no, I am very good. And as I was saying, that this is normally a Patreon bonus show, and the deal is that me and Hawes both bought the Star Wars Year by Year, a visual history, updated and expanded edition. We go through it year by year and talk about the articles. Much fun Star Wars conversation does spring up. We also have a habit of not sticking to the year we're meant to be talking about.
You might. I mean, we can't guarantee it, but there could very well be an out-of-place Shadows of the Empire reference somewhere.
Oh, dude, spoilers. That's horrible. What is it? Is this episode 4, Hawes, do you think?
It is.
Okay. So, yeah, if you want to find out what was going on in 1974, that's on the previous episode on both our Patreon little feeds on Patreon. Patreon is the best place to get Patreon feeds, I've found, Hawes.
Yeah, for sure.
Alrighty, Hawes, 1975, set the scene for us, buddy.
Alrighty, Ralph McQuarrie. So that's what we're jumping off with some Ralph McQuarrie. This page, I have to say, features my all-time favorite Ralph McQuarrie concept piece, prominently displayed. Ralph McQuarrie already has an extensive career as a technical illustrator and several film posters to his credit when he first meets Lucas. McQuarrie admits he finds satisfaction in watching machinery and studying how bits of things relate to each other. Working on The Star Wars, he finds his collaboration with Lucas stimulating because the movie story is not set in time. This gives me quite a sense of liberation. With this sort of freedom, an illustrator's work is enormous fun.
And fun is fun. All right. So one of your favorite Ralph McQuarrie illustrations is on this spread. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. All right. It is.
All right. So I'm going to break them down for everyone. You've got the artwork of Luke Starkiller, I think he is at that time with a mask fighting Darth Vader, and Darth Vader's got a blaster as well. But and yeah, Luke Skywalker, whoever Luke Skywalker is, he's got a breath mask. You've got the concept C-3PO and R2-D2 in the desert with C-3PO looking very Metropolis, gold droid. You've got the Cloud City Bespin among the...
Which, if you read the annotation, there's an interesting piece of information I never knew.
Okay, February 12th, the Imperial City of Alderaan floats in grey clouds. So is that the same? I thought they just made it grey because it was in the background of this spread, but he originally did it with grey clouds.
Yeah.
So is the Empire Strikes Back image of Bespin the same painting with the color change, or did he repaint it?
You know, honestly, I don't know.
Come clean, Macquarie. Come clean.
Hey, man, he had to crank out a lot of work. Some shortcuts needed to be made.
Well, that's like the Vanity Fair photos. And there's the one of Mark Hamill.
And it's
from the last movie.
Yeah, man. I love those J.W. Rinzler books. Man, I got to say, I think the most interesting J.W. Rinzler books would be the ones we're never going to get, though.
Right.
I think there is some stories to be told that we may never hear.
Or may hear and never be able to say.
Exactly.
I don't know. It doesn't feel right. They had a photo from last time of Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, which they used. And
right.
And then they sort of just photoshopped it in another scene with the fire behind it and R2-D2. And I feel like a goof because you make these podcasts going, well, and you know those the pictures for Vanity Fair aren't often canon. Because they just set up cool photos, but I feel a bit shortchanged there, Hawes.
I know. I was surprised we got a picture of Mark Hamill at all. So the initial shock led me to just be like, "Oh wow, there's Luke." I would have never expected to see this. Like I figured they would keep something like that secretive.
Dude, and exactly the same. Exactly the same.
And so that's what I remember seeing the comparison image. Right? Is his hood up in the Last Jedi one as well?
I don't know
what I mean?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember it.
It's already tarnished. Hood up, hood down. It matters
what's
a little
matter?
To me.
Yeah.
So, we have to work out whether Ralph McQuarrie just colorized that thing. But it is interesting to look at Bespin. It's described in the caption as the Imperial City because Ralph McQuarrie used it as concept art for Star Wars. But it is very interesting to look at it like the Bespin and go, what if that was an Imperial City?
Or what if that was Alderaan?
Right.
Because that's what it says, the Imperial City of Alderaan.
But I think at that point, who knows what it was then? Because you know how he just uses names? Like he just copies and pastes them. Oh, Georgie boy. All right. Anyway, so we're trying to break down. This is the segment where we're trying to break down Hawes' favorite Ralph McQuarrie image. So far, we've got the Luke and Darth, C-3PO and R2-D2, the gray cloud city. Then there's the Y-wings going into a bit Starkiller base-ish looking Death Star arrangement. And then there's a very nice artistic piece of like a bit of a shootout on Tatooine with what I guess would become Greedo actually standing up and drawing his weapon against, I guess, who would become Han Solo. So a lot more dangerous a situation there than the under-the-table shenanigans that we're used to, Hawes.
Yeah, and a very beefy stormtrooper. You see that guy? Beefy.
Beefy. I'm going to guess that the Luke and Darth is your favorite one.
You are correct.
I knew it. I know your sensibilities, Hawes.
Yeah, buddy. I mean, I just like that Vader costume. Like, I remember, because when I was a kid, I didn't have like a lot of the concept art books or anything like that. And so the first time I ever saw this sort of like concept of Darth Vader.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah.
That sounded like it was heading to a real sob story. Like when I was a kid, you know, I only had half an R2-D2. That was all that. But it turned out to be so light. I didn't have any of the concept books. I was doing it tough. Not a concept book. I didn't know the development of the snow speeder. Nothing.
Nope, it was nothing, man. I was a man without information. And the first time I saw this like sort of depiction of Vader in this form, do you remember the they had to have come out around the time of the special editions. They were Topps collector cards that were widescreen format.
Yes. I love that.
Me too. And on the back of one of them, so they would be, you know, just frames from the movies in widescreen, but on the back they'd have a little bit of information and sometimes a little piece of concept art. And that's the first time on the back of one of those cards is when I saw sort of this depiction of Vader. And I think it's really cool. And I love how they sort of went this route for the Vader and Rebels.
Ah, yeah, with the more... menacing grill. All right, what else we got going on this one, Hawes?
Something else I think is really neat. January 28th, Lucas completes the second draft titled Adventures of the Star Killer, a radical reworking of the first draft. According to Lucas, only a few scenes remain unchanged. The new opening sequence focuses on R2-D2 and C-3PO, now referred to as droids. The change startles Alan Ladd Jr. and Coppola, who thought the first draft was fine. And what I love about this is that he had it bound and embossed in gold.
Dude, look at that. That cover, it's pretty exceptional.
It's the sacred Jedi text!
Do you think the new script startled Alan Ladd Jr. or the cover?
Probably the cover. He's like, damn, he went all out this time.
Spared no expense. But it is this gold foil cover of a script, mind you. And then in this sort of 70s spiral font, it's, what does it say? It just says the Starkiller. And then in the middle, it's got Adventures of Starkiller. But it's... Yeah, it's got like luxury, a bit of a disco vibe, and then the blandest font ever, just saying The Adventures of Starkiller.
Oh, man. That's got to be somewhere in like the Lucasfilm archives, right?
You'd hope. Imagine if Star Wars didn't work out right, and it really shouldn't have, because there's like 300 like very lucky mistakes that sort of saved it or got it to the point where we love it. And so it doesn't work out. And then like you just did a garage sale or, you know, something like here in LA, like the garage sales are always really interesting because people, you know, used to work in movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you always sort of think you're going to find this, you know, a pile of Revenge of the Jedi posters or something. And so Star Wars doesn't work out, but then you just find this script and this gold glitter, and then you open it up and the story of Star Wars is in it. Like,
oh my God.
What a, I wonder if, like, without all the special effects and the acting and stuff, just the script, and it's in an early form, but I wonder if it would just captivate you where, because, you know, we love Star Wars so much, Hawes, and just if it just, it's just the connection of the story just hooked us in, and you just became as big a fan of Star Wars as you are now but you're the only person that knows about Star Wars.
Incredibly niche. Like, you're the only have you seen the trailer? I can't remember the name. There's a movie coming out where, like, this guy wakes up one day and nobody's ever heard of the Beatles.
I've seen posters for this. Yeah,
I saw the trailer and I remember hearing about the concept maybe like a year or so ago and being like, I don't know, but the trailer actually seemed kind of fun because, like, he's the only person in the world that remembers the Beatles. So he starts re-recording their songs and touring them and stuff.
Yeah, that's so, I always wonder that with skateboarding because, like, you could go back, if you went back in time, like when I skateboarded all the time, if I went back in time 10 years, I'd be like the best skateboarder in the world.
Oh, I gotcha.
Because it, like, progressed so much that it's so weird. Like, I think a kid now that skateboards for like 6 months because it's progressed so much will instantly be better than I ever was.
Right.
Just because the starting level is so high or whatever.
So what we should do instead is go back in time and stop that Beatles movie from being made and make your Finding the Star Wars script story as a movie. I mean, I love the Beatles, but that's a way better movie.
It'd be frustrating. Don't you think it'd be like, it'd be like a tragedy.
Right.
And then, like, at the end, he sees the portal to the other dimension, the other reality, and he sees, like, Bob Iger opening Galaxy's Edge, and he's like, "What?" And then he can't get through to that reality, and he's like stuck. And at the same time that he's looking through this portal, unknowing to him, his gold book is on fire and it's burning.
Oh, this is like a Black Mirror episode. I was going to go a little darker and say he sees through the portal and sees a bunch of Last Jedi trolls. And he's like, you know what? I'm good. I'll stay here.
Either or. All right. Gold script. What's up next, Hawes?
Okay. This is one that I think is pretty neat. Droids in the Desert. In his first painting for Lucas, McQuarrie depicts the droids R2-D2 and C-3PO, aka R2-D2 and C-3PO, on a sand planet. I gave R2 three legs, figuring he'd throw himself forward like a person on crutches. Hey, man. I picked up some landscape from a photograph of the Oregon coast because I like the cliff, and I just put the sand dunes in. At Lucas's instruction, McQuarrie revises C-3PO, making him appear less human and more mechanical. And this is the painting that, if you've ever heard Anthony Daniels talk about Star Wars, that he references as seeing in Lucas's office when he went in to meet with him about the role.
I got a confession, Paul.
Okay.
This might shock you.
Mm-hmm.
I always, especially when I was younger, resented the Star Wars Ralph McQuarrie concept art.
Why is that?
Because it was just off what it was.
I gotcha.
Like, it sort of, some of it seems old, like it's older. Like, the aesthetic is sort of more, I guess, 70s than 80s.
Right. Well, I could kind of see what you were saying. Like, so for instance, if, let's say, they really are doing some sort of movie set thousands of years before, like, The Phantom Menace, like, I could almost see that design of C-3PO being more like the type of droid you would see then.
Yes.
Right? Same thing goes for, like, Luke and Vader.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more historic, or definitely from where they decided Star Wars technology was in the films. You know, it's the world that's depicted in this concept art is like way more, you know, less advanced than what we saw in the film.
Yeah, and some pieces have more of like, definitely more of a, like a Buck Rogers feel to them or something, which makes a lot of sense, obviously, considering its influence on Star Wars. Like, there's one coming up when we turn the page that, like, there's some definitely some Buck Rogers business going on.
But get this. The concept art for Return of the Jedi, I just love it.
And that's one that Ralph McQuarrie didn't work a ton on, right?
Hey, I'm not stepping to McQuarrie.
All right. No, I know you're not. I'm just saying, like, isn't that the case, though? Didn't he sort of back out towards the beginning of Return of the Jedi because he was sort of burnt out on it?
Yeah, I think he saw the Ewoks. And
oh, really?
And maybe decided it wasn't for him anymore. But, no, I think I like, Return of the Jedi is my favorite film, of course, but I think because the Star Wars aesthetic was so
set in stone by that point.
Yeah, so it's just sort of variations of what ended up on the screen sort of thing.
Yeah, it definitely, even some of the Empire Strikes Back stuff is so close, you know, like there's definitely some variation in that one, but by the time Return of the Jedi rolls around, they've got it down pretty well.
Well, even in Steven Sansweet's iconic book Concept Screen to Collectible, and I say that with that is the sacred text as far as I'm concerned in my Star Wars fandom, but they had some concept art in there of Yoda, and he was far more wizardy, and then there was other ones where he was far more elfy, like sort of,
yeah, almost like a gnome.
Yeah, man. And I remember when I first saw him, I was like, yeah, I love this book, but I'm not digging this page at all.
I gotta say, like, maybe it's because when I first saw these, you know, it was sort of during the time when we weren't getting new Star Wars, and it was almost like seeing new Star Wars stuff I'd never seen before. But like, I love when they do statues of these, like, concept arts. I love those concept art figures that they did. I actually hunted a few of those down during Celebration and ended up only getting the Ki-Adi Mundi concept figure.
What?
Yeah, you've never seen that one?
Is there seriously a Ki-Adi Mundi concept figure?
There is, and he's got an eye patch.
And they made a statue of it?
Not a statue, a Hasbro figure.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't even know that. Really?
Yeah. They, I actually got two pretty cool Ki-Adi, like, you know, I guess you would say sort of like interesting takes on Ki-Adi Mundi figures. I got the concept figure, and then I got his Clone Wars figure. So he's done sort of in the Clone Wars animated style.
All right,
also pretty cool.
Drop the knowledge on who Ki-Adi Mundi is for everyone that maybe isn't as in the loop.
He is the best part of the prequels. I don't care what King Tom says. He's snarky. He's the Jedi. And for the record, one of the few Jedi masters that's on the council through the entire prequel trilogy. He's got the big head that, you know, may look like a part of the male anatomy. He's very worried about the droid attack on the Wookiees. He's great.
He does seem like a bit of a stick in the mud.
He does.
But to his credit and the film's credit, Revenge of the Sith, when he does get slain, you do go, didn't deserve that, but.
No, man. And, you know, like, during that Order 66 scene in Revenge of the Sith, you see a lot of Jedi go down that you've only seen glimpses of, to be fair. You know, like Plo Koon, you barely see in the prequels, and why can't I remember her name? The blue lady.
Aayla Secura?
Aayla Secura. Like, you barely see her. But Ki-Adi Mundi, like, look, he's not a main character, but he's got dialogue, at least, in all three prequels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they take him out. It's brutal. I wish he had survived, because then, like, I could be that guy that's always like, oh, is he going to show up in Rebels? Oh, is he going to be in the new video game?
He still might be in the video game halls. Don't worry. Yeah, so I've always, the early concept art, it's sort of, I appreciate it, but I don't like it.
I gotcha.
And like, you know, like I look at C-3PO and I, you know, get like the film history that went, I appreciate all that, but yeah, it just... I don't know. It just sort of, I don't know if it's just like subconsciously reminding me of how bad this film could have been.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things, man. Like, what if that's what C-3PO looked like? Would he be as iconic as he is now? I don't think so, but.
Yeah. But like, if just say Lucas, like it was just 5 years earlier and he was like making the same film, like like, who knows how it would turn? Like, it was just, as I say, a lot of happy accidents. But I have to say, that concept art picture of sort of like Tatooine, the cantina, with Greedo and Han pulling the weapons, that almost looks like concept art for Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I guess from the videos and stuff I've seen, I could see that sort of being like, I guess I don't really have any reference where it is, but I can sort of see what you're talking about, like the area where all the shops and stuff are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I can totally see that.
It's all connected, Hawes. It's all connected. Now, on the next page is just a giant spread of, I actually do like this concept art. Because the land speed looks so good. But it's Luke looking over the cliff face to Mos Eisley. And there's a land speeder, which is it's got a roof. It's got little fold-up little windows, like the Thunderhawk in Mask.
Yeah, gull-wing doors.
Ah, gull-wing doors, exactly. DeLorean doors. And then, in very out of focus is C-3PO and R2-D2. And I guess I like this one because they're so out of focus that I can't tell what style they're drawn in. But the land speeder I don't think he should have had this in the film.
But it looks cool.
Yeah, but if I had a choice of having Luke's one or this one, I'm going this one for sure.
Is this a design that... Because, you know... One of the things that sort of comes up in the Disney era of Star Wars is like some recycling of unused Rikori concepts. Like, you know, the character Zeb from Rebels was an unused Chewbacca concept, right? I can't recall ever seeing this speeder show up anywhere, but I would think that would be one that would be cool to bring in.
Yeah. A nice... little deep cut. I like the harmless deep cuts.
There's an interesting piece of information in the description below. I won't read the whole thing. I'll just get to the interesting part. For a few weeks during pre-production, the character of Luke became a young woman as evidenced in this particular painting, which also shows McQuarrie's design for a land speeder with gull wing doors inspired by Mercedes-Benz. Ooh, don't tell the internet about that one.
Oof, not my Luke Skywalker, Hawes.
Oh my goodness.
Hey, so this is what we're looking at is, you know, the Mos Eisley, a wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious, looking over the cliff. And I have looked across at that in real life. It's in Death Valley in California.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And the cliff's different, right? There is a cliff there, but that's not the cliff they film from. But the view of the... Mos Eisley is the Salt Flats. And when you look, it is quite chilling. Like it was seriously cool to go, Mos Eisley's just there, dudes.
So is that from when they finished filming in England and came back and had to reshoot some stuff, right? And add some stuff. Is that when they did that particular filming?
Yeah. I don't know if that one was planned or not, because it's just a, it's an effect shot.
Oh, I gotcha.
And then, do you know what I mean? And then after, like, when the special editions came out, they made it so there was, you know, there was more busy, like, ships going around and stuff from that view.
Right.
So, but yeah, it was really, really cool. Let's flip that page, Hawes.
All right.
And some people actually, some sickos actually read the book along with us. So we're on page 40, everyone.
Yeah.
And what do you got on? What do you got here, buddy?
We have Alex Tavolaris, the brother of production designer Dean, who had worked on the
What's Dean's surname?
The same as his brother.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Who had worked on The Godfather is hired to draw storyboards for the opening sequence of the Star Wars. As with Macquarie's concept paintings, the purpose of the storyboards is not only to communicate visual information to other members of the production, but to calculate the expense of special effects shots for the sequence. His other credits include The Conversation and Hard Times. Dude, there is a whack drawing of Darth Vader on this page.
Yeah, man. Alex's art style does not. Yeah, I'm not down with it. The picture of Darth Vader looks like his mouth's a like a vacuum port or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Oof. And there's a line drawing of like C-3PO where he kind of looks like a robot woman, but very
haunt your dreams.
Makes me feel very weird. How about this one, Hawes? This one might be important. Lucas meets John Williams. After Lucas tells Steven Spielberg that he's considering a classical romantic soundtrack for The Star Wars, Spielberg introduces him to composer John Williams, who scored Spielberg's first two theatrical releases, The Sugarland Express and Jaws.
Mm, historic. Still doing the Star Wars today.
So I went and saw John Williams last year.
Right.
And special guest was Steven Spielberg. And he came out and sort of gave, I don't know, like sort of Oscars style introductions for a few of the songs,
mm-hmm.
which were very interesting. But then when they'd play the song, Spielberg would sit, there was a spare seat for him in the orchestra, and he'd and he'd like be surrounded by them all, and he'd just look up on the big screen and like watch that scene. So like, you know, one of the greatest things ever is that scene in E.T. where the bikes take off.
Right.
That kills me. Like, it just gets me every time. So that's like one of the scenes, right? And so he's just sitting there with the orchestra looking up. I just like, what is he thinking?
It'd have been awesome if he just whipped out like a bass guitar or something, something that didn't even fit in with the orchestra.
Right. It's just like, what a surreal situation to be in. That you've got like 10,000 people watching you. It's just very weird. And you're sitting in an orchestra watching your old film. But he did it with class. He did it with class. Are you one of these music, aficionados?
I mean, I enjoy music quite a bit, but I'm not necessarily a film score guy. Like, I love John Williams Star Wars scores and E.T. and, you know, all that stuff. But I'm not one of those guys that can, like, hear somebody besides John Williams and go, oh, that's Howard Shore, you know? And to be honest, like, I knew John Williams, and that was pretty much it until I got into Lost. And I liked the Lost music so much that I was like, well, who's this guy? And it Michael Giacchino. So I sort of got into him. But, you know, like, I buy the new Star Wars soundtracks when they come out and I'll listen to them, but it's not something I find myself going back to a ton, even though I enjoy them. I enjoy them more in the context of the movie.
That sounded almost like a threat, Hawes.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, I'll buy these new movie soundtracks, and yeah, I'll listen to them, but I won't like it.
Well, I mean, I like it. It's just, I need some lyric steel.
Ah, really? I like those Jedi steps, just quietly.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I remember that just sticking with my, like, the days after The Force Awakens, just, I was whistling it. I was whistling steps. I tells you.
Ray's theme has been my ringtone on my phone since the day after The Force Awakens came out. Like, I think that is easily, you know, just as classic as any other piece of Star Wars music.
Well, she's opened up a lot of great phone calls for you.
She sure has.
How about this one in April, Hawes? Lucas meets Dykstra. Lucas decides to start his own special effects house. Love it. Who hasn't thought that? To save time and money. At the effects company, Future General, he meets with Douglas Trumbull's colleague, John Dykstra, who assisted Trumbull on 2001 and Silent Running. Lucas explains his ambition to see spaceships in dogfights. What an ambition. That's brilliant. And shows Dykstra his own collection of aerial battles culled from various war movies. Dykstra says the effects can be achieved if Lucas finances the building of a motion control camera. That sounds like a scene in a film in itself. We can do it, George.
Mm-hmm.
But we need lots of money.
Yeah, and wasn't there some drama between these two after Star Wars? Like, didn't he go on and make Battlestar Galactica after this? Like, A New Hope is the only one Dykstra worked on, right?
Yeah, so... yeah, Battlestar Galactica got started on American TV off the back of Star Wars. And
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And yeah, they sort of poached him, and George did not take it well.
No, he did not.
He got proused.
Yeah, he sure did. He's not, I just watched, Empire of Dreams? Is that the documentary that was on the DVD set?
Yeah.
Back in the day? I watched that for the first time in a little while, and I'm pretty sure John Dykstra is nowhere in that.
Not a mention.
I don't believe so.
Because we'll of course get to it, but he invented the Dykstra Flex camera. Love it. Such a he had such a good surname to name something after.
Right. So, and his daughter is like a fairly well known like cosplayer and internet personality now.
True that. What about this one, Hawes? Betamax. May 10th, Betamax, a home video cassette record system developed by Sony, is released. Sony's SL620 videotape recorder, VTR, ships as a console with a 48 centimeter, 19 inch, Sony Trinitron TV. The price is $2,495.
How expensive is that today? I should look that up.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be, that's got to be like 10 grand at least, surely.
right? So that was what, 1975?
Yo.
And it is 249.5.
What have you got, an inflation website going on there, Hawes?
I do. I typed it. It popped right up.
Hawes is lying. He's got a bookmarked. Oh, he's always,
you were.
He's always talking about inflation. It's all he talks about.
You are so close. It's crazy. 2,495 of 1975 dollars would be worth $11,604 in 2019.
Damn. What's the most expensive video player you've ever bought, Hawes?
Probably my first Blu-ray player.
No, which video player? Thanks.
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know that I ever bought a VCR for myself.
Really? How much was this Blu-ray player then?
$600.
Woof.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
2006.
Early adopter.
Yeah.
I once picked up a VCR, Hawes,
mm-hmm.
for a sweet $999.
Whoa, buddy. Do you remember your first VHS you ever bought?
Yes, it came. Buying videos was not a big thing in Australia for a long time. Like it was, we were more of a hiring
right
culture. But if you bought three blank videotapes, sometimes they'd have a promotion where you get like a movie with it. And we got The Last Starfighter, and I watched the bejesus out of that thing.
Have I ever told you about the time I got my dad banned from a video rental store when I was a kid?
No, but please continue.
So we used to go to this place called Movie Time Video when I was very young.
Great establishment.
And yes. And I even remember the movie we were renting. It was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And we go up to the counter, and you could either rent a movie for one day or 2 days. And the lady goes, would you like this as a 1 day or a 2 day rental? And before my dad can say anything, I pipe up and say, we only need it for 1 day. We're going to copy it. Banned. Banned from Movie Time Video.
Bummer, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well. But where are they now? Am I right?
Shut down.
Shut down. But yeah, this video player, it would play videos from America, which was very special.
Oh, so it was like region free.
Yeah, it was more format. Like, you guys had like a different, your like TV system is called NTSC.
And you guys are on PAL, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you needed a $1,000 video player to that could play both. And it also had long play, which for the time was very advanced.
Nice.
It was like in that area of time where I was out of school with a job but living at my parents' house.
Oh, the golden years.
Dude, you could buy anything.
I bought so much dumb shit.
The best. Once we get to the 90s, then a lot of the my list of wasted money will very much be coming up.
Yeah, mine too.
Wow. All right, what else you got on this one, Hawes?
We skipped over an important one. Oh. March 13th, Shampoo is released, directed by Hal Ashby. The movie stars Warren Beatty and features Carrie Fisher in her theatrical debut.
I thought you meant the product.
No. Shampoo was invented in 1975.
I can't believe half the 70s went without shampoo.
Well, you look at some of the pictures in here and you could wonder.
You very much could. Carrie Fisher looks I love this look. She's like a pirate tennis player or something.
Hey, I dig it.
Yeah. Got her own vibe. Then we've got June of 1975, Jaws comes out. Jaws breaks the box office record previously set by The Godfather and becomes the first movie to earn $100 million in theatrical rentals.
Man, that made less money than Solo.
Right?
And we got four Jaws movies.
Oh my God. One of them broke a dimension as well. All right, this one's very interesting, Hawes. July, Joseph Campbell. While working on the third draft summary for the Star Wars, Lucas reads Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces, a book he'd already read while studying anthropology. Lucas is influenced and inspired by Campbell's observations on the cross-cultural and historical similarities of mythical heroes and their journeys. Joseph Campbell, Hawes, what do you know?
I am not as well read on Joseph Campbell as a lot of our friends and Star Wars colleagues. I recognize his influence and place in Star Wars history, though.
Hawes made the inverted commas friends single when he said that.
No, never.
We don't even have video on, so. Yeah, I sort of know the broad strokes, but I haven't delved in there. I always find it weird when like the hero's journey, and people complain that the new movies don't have the hero's journey, or it doesn't like fit into these rules, and I kind of think that's one thing that like all the rules sort of hold Star Wars back, or if they did stick to the rules sort of thing.
Yeah, you know.
Because I used to be a real stickler. Do you know what I mean? Right. So I understand the thinking.
I totally get it too. And I get being attached to elements of Star Wars very like closely attached to them. But I also feel like, if we're going to be getting Star Wars movies fairly frequently for a long time, then they got to break the mold here and there, you know, like keep it fresh. So I don't know.
You got anything else on this page, Hawes?
Yep. Maybe one of my favorite pictures on the page, Ben Burtt.
Oh my God. Yeah. This is right up your alley.
Because Walter Murch is not available for the sound effects and sound design for the Star Wars, Lucas contacts his friend, Professor Ken Mura at the USC film department, who highly recommends Ben Burtt. Gary Kurtz meets with Ben Burtt to discuss Lucas's movie and hires Burtt to create sound effects for spaceships, weapons, and a Wookiee. Burtt begins recording the sounds of animals and vehicles at various locations. And then the picture has Ben Burtt looking awesome. To create Wookiee sounds, Ben Burtt records a bear called Pooh. And he's just sitting there holding the microphone in front of the bear.
The one thing that you don't know about this photo, Hawes, is shortly after this recording was done, the bear attacked Burtt. And the sound effect from that recording, that's the Willem scream.
Oh, man, I don't believe it.
I remember just being, it was so enchanting for a little boy or girl, but I was a boy, to see the footage of Ben Burtt, not recording with bears, but how he would like just have a spanner and just like tap a power line.
Right. To get the laser sound.
Oh, like the fact like our primary school, there was portable classrooms. And if you like threw a stone against them, it made like a laser noise. And
so
just see Ben Burtt making all these noises, it sort of, you know, like you'd go outside and just start tapping stuff. It's like, what noise could this be?
Oh, man, that's cool.
Love it. Did you ever have like just with sound effects, we had, I got to ask some friends that I went to primary school with. One day, this guy just turned up with a synthesizer and just gave us a demo one afternoon.
Like just not a classmate, just a guy showed up and was like, this is a synthesizer. And
like
I'm going to.
Like an adult.
Ah.
And just gave like the whole afternoon, just this, like, and someone would like talk and then he'd make it repeat and stuff. And it all be just like, yeah. And like, it was like The Simpsons, like everyone walked out of there going, we're all getting synthesizers. How much are these things? We're getting into them.
Like, dude, that's a way better than any presentation I saw in school.
The synthavos. That was education in Australia. All right, so I'm flipping the page, I think, Hawes.
Okay.
I think we're on page 42 now, everyone. What do you got on this one?
The third draft. Lucas completes his third draft, now titled The Star Wars, From the Adventures of Luke Starkiller. Significant changes included Deke Starkiller being replaced by Princess Leia, and a previously unnamed old man Jedi becomes General Ben Kenobi. Possibly in keeping with Joseph Campbell's analysis of mythology, Luke Starkiller becomes a loner whose deceased father was a Jedi.
A loner.
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly say he's much of a loner in the final film, though, right?
Nah, he's a loner.
You think so?
Where's all his mates?
They got cut out of the film.
Yeah, I'm talking about the final film. But even like when he was hanging out with them, he wasn't really...
They weren't real cool to him, huh?
Nah. But he showed them in that The Last Jedi novelization. He showed them all.
Wormy, man. Hey, did you ever have an embarrassing, like a nickname you hated when you were a kid? Like Wormy?
Nah, my name was too silly for anyone to make up something else. Like people would say like metal or something like that. And it would just
But
like,
nothing good.
And nothing that stuck.
Man, I had one and it was all my mom's fault because when she was picking me up from school one day, she called me, and I can't believe I'm saying this one, Halsey Walsey. And dude, I went to a very small school. So like I graduated high school with kids I was in kindergarten with.
Yeah, right.
So like I knew these kids for years and that name stuck for a long time. Halsey Walsey.
Wow. And ironically, Halsey loves the Star Warsy.
He does.
Dude, that's brutal. I'm constantly making Jackie paranoid that that's going to be her entire existence, is just like yelling out stuff at the car and stuff to Harry. So you're going to do it, dude. You're going to be like the worst one. Like you could be like, they could study you. I feel like you've got it in you to be the most embarrassing mother of all time.
Have you ever seen that movie, Almost Famous?
Yes. Yes.
You know when the mom drops him off at the concert and he's walking off and she's like, don't do drugs. And all the dudes in the crowd are like, don't do drugs. That's what it makes me think of.
Yeah, that is that is the future. That is the future. Casting begins, Hawes. Lucas's friend, producer Fred Ruse, enlists casting director Diane Crittenden to begin casting for the Star Wars at Zoetrope offices at Goldwyn Studios. The early casting process tests about 250 actors a day for 3 weeks. Oof. Wow. Brian De Palma joins Lucas and looks for actors for his upcoming film of Stephen King's Carrie. De Palma considers a young Carrie Fisher for the title role. On brand. As a child, I always thought it was weird that the book Carrie was the same name as Princess Leia.
Oh, really?
That was a Star Wars reference for me, like when I was a little kid, when I was just like desperate for references.
Speaking of that Empire of Dreams documentary, there's a lot of good, like, grainy black and white footage of these casting sessions. And you see, like, different people trying out for Luke, Han, and Leia. Like, I can't remember the actor's name, but he was in The Great American Hero later. Was, like, one of his bigger roles. He was trying out for Luke. And then Kurt Russell trying out for Han Solo is one I always enjoy because I like Kurt Russell quite a bit.
The greatest American superhero went for the role.
Yeah, he went for Luke.
That show was so frustrating, man. How did you lose the book? What a dick.
It's like losing the book for an NES game back in the day.
Oh, my God. There was this show on television. I guess that's weird. It was a superhero show on TV. You sort of don't think of superhero shows being on TV back then. But in the 80s, The Greatest American Superhero, this guy finds this like super suit from alien technology that he's meant to use to save the planet or something, but he loses the instruction manual. So he can't use it properly ever. And it was just so frustrating.
Great theme song, though.
Amazing theme song, but just find the book. I just wanted to be able to fly properly.
Yeah, that's a show that I have vague memories of watching as a kid. Like, I don't remember it a whole lot, but I do. Like, I remember the theme song and the opening credits and a few pieces here and there. I got to say, one of my favorite things to do is imagine Kurt Russell playing all of Harrison Ford's roles and Harrison Ford playing all of Kurt Russell's roles. I have a lot of free time to think, Stu.
Excellent. What's your favorite Kurt Russell role for Harrison Ford to play?
Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, he'd be pretty good at that.
Yeah.
What about he was Snake Blitzkin or whatever as well, yeah?
Yeah, not a bad one. Captain Ron.
What's that from?
You've never seen Captain Ron? It's not great. But Captain Ron is a sort of like a romantic comedy movie where Kurt Russell is like the captain of a boat. Maybe Goldie Hawn is in it. I can't remember it real well, but it's definitely not a role you see can envision Harrison Ford doing.
Well, I just think that like Escape from New York, it'd just be so good just like to have him like Harrison Ford in an eye patch and just saying all those corny lines.
Right. Oh,
and in the sequel, doesn't
surfing?
He surfs like a nuclear blast or something.
Yeah. That would be great to see Harrison Ford do.
That'd be amazing. Lucas meets Joe Johnston, needing someone to help with the redesign of concept models to create storyboards for front projection sequences. ILM's production manager, Bob Shepherd, hires Joe Johnston to start the art department. After meeting with Lucas and John Dykstra, Johnston redesigns the models so they will work better with the blue screen process. Shepherd praises Johnston as the only one at ILM who could really make images that you understood, which is an important part of images. I have heard Joe Johnston's here painting a Y-wing, and he has got almost like a hairdo that's like Darth Vader's, like the top of his mask, the top of his helmet.
It's like Prince Valiant hair.
Oh my God, that is a sweet helmet. I went to a Joe Johnston panel at Comic-Con one year, and he's just a true grizzled Hollywood veteran.
Yeah, and you know, there was a lot of like, I wouldn't say like fervor, but like people were tossing around the idea of him.
Oh, here we go.
Directing the Boba Fett movie.
Yeah, it's always with this Boba Fett movie.
Yeah, man. I won't let that on my deathbed. I'll be like, I sure wish they made that Boba Fett movie.
Well, maybe in the alternate galaxy, the dude that found the Star Wars script, he makes his own Boba Fett film.
Oh,
so how's that for irony? That he
He just pulls out the character of Boba Fett and he's like, let's just do this.
Yeah. And it's weird because that character's not even in Star Wars. So
right.
It makes the whole story even more puzzling. But yeah, he was just like, he just seemed like a dude that just after a day just had a scotch on the rocks.
Nice. My kind of dude.
He just kicked back. But he was excellent. Hawes, what else you got, buddy?
We got the UK casting. Because Lucas decides to film much of the movie in England, English actors are cast for the supporting roles, including prominent costume characters. Anthony Daniels, an actor whose experience ranges from stage work to radio dramas and mime, is cast as C-3PO. Although a remote-controlled motorized R2-D2 is planned for some scenes, an empty R2-D2 costume with a rotatable dome that requires a small actor leads to the casting of Kenny Baker, a cabaret performer. Offered for the roles of either Darth Vader or Chewbacca, David Prowse chooses the villain. Peter Mayhew, a porter at London's King College Hospital, is cast as Chewbacca.
All right. Alternate timeline number two.
Uh-oh.
Dave Prowse chooses Chewbacca.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, you could get a Darth Vader autograph at Star Wars Celebration a lot easier.
Yeah, that's another bizarre thing that they seem to. I'm not saying that David Prowse is a murderous evil person, but they do sort of suit the characters they ended up with far better than the other way around.
Oh, definitely. Like, I don't know how menacing Vader would have been with old Peter Mayhew behind the wheel.
What else do we have here? What's this? What's going on with Alec Guinness? He signs on.
Yep, and they talk about how they were considering Toshiro Mifune from The Hidden Fortress, a Kurosawa movie, which, you know, obviously Kurosawa was also a big influence on George Lucas. But they ended up going with Alec Guinness.
The English actor Alec Guinness receives a copy of the script and finds himself excited despite the sci-fi genre being a new direction for him. He is impressed by the new breed of filmmaker. You reckon that's... Do you think he went in with higher hopes than he left with Hawes?
It definitely feels that way in retrospect and, you know, hearing about his feelings on the movies afterwards.
Yeah, I wonder if this is just, you know, like how factual this is. Or did he say one thing one time or...
Right.
That doesn't matter.
It says Guinness realizes the commercial potential in Star Wars and signs a contract that includes 2% of the net profits.
Dude. You should love those films, Sir Alec.
Yeah, man. As should your kids and their grandkids and their kids.
Hey, September 4th, the television series Space 1999 premieres in the UK. Did you ever catch this thing? I saw it and I remember seeing the toys when I was tiny, but I've got no memory of what actually happened in the show.
As far as I know, I've never seen it.
But the reason why it's getting a mention here is Lucas orders a redesign of Han Solo's pirate ship when he realizes it closely resembles Space 1999's Eagle transporter ship. Both were based on 2001's lunar shuttle. So, you know, if you're gonna use these influences, you got to make sure that, what is that Krusty the Clown line? You get like when someone rings him, he goes, unless you're Steve Allen, you're stealing my bit.
Oh, that is an excellent Krusty impersonation.
Really? I'm not really one for impersonations.
That's really good.
I have a hard enough time being myself, whores.
I hear you, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. But and then I think that the old Falcon became the blockade runner. Am I right?
Yeah, slightly redesigned. Like they changed the front bit a little bit and a few things here and there, but that's definitely what it became.
Did we talk about this on another episode? That imagine if they used that, like the original one, the one that we'll go at the Space 1999 one, and then just imagine like the Force Awakens with that that ship getting chased by the First Order and Jakku, like going through the Star Destroyer, like how bizarre that would be.
Doesn't work, does it? I don't think we did talk about that, but
I've said it to someone, but maybe I said it to Robbo. I'm sure I've recorded that concept before, but yeah, I've got an edit of it in my head. Like, it's just the first teaser, the first Force Awakens teaser.
With that ship instead?
Yeah, and everyone cheers. Everyone's crying.
And everybody's all excited talking about Chewie, we're home for that ship? Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Be pretty sick. Be pretty sick. They list a few pop culture things going on here. October 11th in 1975, Saturday Night Live started. And November 11th, Happy Days started. And I just want to mention Happy Days because another, maybe one of the greatest Simpsons quotes of all time is when Homer's talking to Marge, I think, and he says, it's like the time I got swindled by some card sharks and my father, Tom Bosley, had to bail me out. And then Marge goes, that's an episode of Happy Days. And Homer goes, oh no, they weren't all happy days.
That is a good one. Do you remember?
So good. Happy Days was a dope show, by the way.
Speaking of Simpsons, this is one of my favorite Halls and Steele Twitter interactions very early on. It was when they put all of the Simpsons on the FX app a couple of years back, 2 or 3 years back. And I had been listening to Steel Wars, caught up on that, started listening to Green Guide Letters. And so I'm sitting there and, you know, I didn't get a lot of the references. And so I'm sitting there watching The Simpsons one day working, and it's the episode where they go to camp. And they watch the safety video before, and they drop the Mr. Black, and I immediately jump on my phone, get on Twitter, and like tweet at you like I'm watching The Simpsons, and I just got the Mr. Black reference.
Yes, because whenever someone said something that was a bit scandalous about a famous person in Australia, we'd Mr. Black it, and it became a lovely tradition. But I do remember, yeah, that clicking. That's so funny. Got anything else on this page, Hawes?
No, they go more into the actors that auditioned, and it was William Catt. That's the actor from Greatest American Hero.
Ah.
And, you know, they talk about how Harrison Ford was brought in to install a door at the American Zoetrope offices, and how they, you know, eventually decided on Han Solo, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill.
All right, here we go. So Harrison Ford, he's given up the acting, and he's going full-time carpentry, and Coppola's got him fixing a door or something. He's doing some carpentry in California. 1975 Harrison Ford. What do you reckon? He's rocking a t-shirt or he's topless? What's going on?
Oh, dude, have you seen that panel from the Star Wars comic where he's chopping wood with
it's exactly what I was thinking of. Dude, after seeing that, I had to go chop some wood. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so did I, buddy. I chopped wood all over the damn house.
does that mean? but yes, very. He very much appreciates woodwork. He likes the craftsmanship of it.
Yeah, I remember hearing an interview with him before The Force Awakens. Maybe it was when he was promoting like Cowboys versus Aliens or something, or Ender's Game. And someone brought up the carpentry thing, and it was one of the few times in the interview where he like perked up and seemed interested to talk about something.
Yeah, he talks about it with a real respect.
Mm-hmm.
And who doesn't want to be respected by Harrison Ford?
I know I do.
I know I do too. Hawes?
Yes, sir.
That's the end of 1975, buddy.
I know. Before we started, we were like, I don't know if we can get through all this.
Yeah, we really, you know, I think we were pretty comprehensive. And next episode, 1976, we're filming Star Wars.
Yeah, man. Exciting stuff.
We get to see some filming. Yeah, so we put up this episode as a for everyone this week because both of us didn't have episodes this week.
Yeah, Will's out of town going to a wedding, and honestly, there's not a lot of Star Wars news to talk about this week. So
yeah, and I hadn't organized a show after my Galaxy's Edge episode. So that sometimes I put up these ones like because they're like time-based, and it just throws out my whole schedule.
Right.
Like I'll bring it out a couple of days early or something, and then that will just... It just ruins the schedule, Hawes. But we make content still.
Yes, we did. We got it done.
Got it done. So, yeah, if you enjoy this format and you enjoy our podcast and you want to support them with a couple bucks a month, we've got three prior episodes of this, and we're going to make more. Should we make more, Hawes?
I hope so.
Okay, cool.
I bought this big-ass book. We got a lot of way to go.
I bought this book twice. I didn't even know.
I know, buddy.
But I do now have the expanded edition. I got this in America, but when I went home to Australia a couple of months ago, I was going through some books to work out what ultra heavy things I was going to try drag back home. And I realized I already owned this book. But now I've got two copies of photos of Joe Johnson's amazing haircut. What you think about that? Hawes, for the good listeners of the Steel Wars podcast, how can people find out more about you and your Star Wars thoughts?
You can catch me on Twitter at Blue Harvest Pod. And I do Blue Harvest with my buddy Will. That usually comes out on Saturdays. And I do Rogue One with Jonathan Grosso and Mike Pappas. And that comes out on Thursdays.
And a lively episode with all three of you this this week.
Man, Mike Pappas was excited to record.
Dude, lay off the Red Bull. he was pumped.
He was, man.
Okay. And for the Blue Harvest listeners, you can follow me at Steel Wars on all the forms of social media. And yeah, check out the Steel Wars podcast if you don't already. That would be awesome. Hawes, this was the bestest of times. I'm actually disappointed that 1975, you know, we didn't have a Smarch or something that we could have gotten a, you know, another month of happenings to talk about with. But that was awesome fun.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks for taking the time to record with me.
My pleasure. Alrighty, guys. Have a awesome week. Enjoy all things Star Wars, except the things that just fill you with hate and dread. Push them away. And may that force be with you. You got to do your ending, Hawes. What's your ending?
May the force be with you. And then Admiral Ackbar goes, may the force be with you.
Perfect.
That's Ben Mendelsohn, right?
Yeah.
I'm just confirming.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.